Well, folks, it's finally happened. Glenn Beck has ruined Christmas for millions of people in the country. He's destroyed conservative. What do you know what in the CRTV stood for, Dave?
I thought it was something conservative, something television.
Right.
I can't remember. That's what I
It'd
thought.
It'd be funny
I,
if it was like conservative Republican TV, but I don't think it was. but yeah, maybe. You know, I actually, I have had a subscription to CRTV for, I think since maybe like March of last year. I was watching YouTube last year, and the promos for Phil Robertson's show, and it's like, just I don't know if you, anybody has seen it, but it's inspiring. Like I think it was like 11 o'clock at night, and I was like, I am going to subscribe to this. It's like Phil Robertson like building a fire, saying, "What do you do when they try to take everything you have away?" And they try to tell you how to talk. It's just him, like, slowly building a fire. He's like, you go out in the woods. So that was his show. And it was pretty cool. I mean, it was short. It was, like, 15-minute things where I think, like, the first episode was him plucking ducks. He had a bunch of dead ducks, and he was, like, plucking the feathers. And as he was cleaning the meat, he was talking to people about, like, you know, how they go buy shit from the grocery store, and but this is what if you really want your food to be clean and organic and yada yada yada. He's one of those people that is he just, when he talks, it's interesting. God blessed certain people with the ability of not only wisdom but a way to impart it. But so, in case any of you haven't heard, Glenn Beck has weaseled his way in. I don't know what Mark Levin was thinking, but the Blaze and CRTV have merged. And as a result, everybody worth a shit at CRTV is gone. Michelle Malkin, Lauren Chin, now Gavin McInnes. Steven Crowder is apparently going to be sick for the next few weeks. So I don't know if that is, you know, some kind of ploy. But I also know that he's had Owen Benjamin do fill in for him. So maybe it's unrelated. But, I mean, there's not a ton of conservative names out there to go choose from. You know, it's like there's not it's not like you go, oh, well, Michelle Malkin walked. Well, we'll just find another super hot minority that is incredibly smart and Republican. Like, you know, they're not growing on trees. And most of the other women that come to mind that are pretty interesting and I might watch are already on like Fox News. They're already on a bigger channel making way more money. And then I don't think that you can, I don't think that CRTV realizes what they've done by losing Gavin, because I think that when you combined all the different personalities, then there was really something for everybody. It really was. I would watch Gavin. I didn't watch Crowder much, and didn't really watch Mark Levin, but I listened to Mark Levin's radio show. I think it's a mess, and I think that Glenn Beck is I almost think that, like, he's like a secret liberal that is just trying to wreak havoc. Like, because it seems like everything he's involved in eventually turns to shit. Like his relationship with Fox, his own thing, and this all Glenn Beck thing. Like, he said he wasn't going to vote for Trump. He cried on TV. He wore sweater vests when it was not the right move. And little fucking bow ties.
Yeah.
With his big fat jowls. And he said, I cannot vote for Trump. Because, and I think, like, I think he, I just tuned him out. But I think that he was citing, like, the pussy grabbing thing. And seriously, it's like, You can say a lot of things that you want about Trump, like he fucks porn stars, whatever, but the pussy grabbing thing was an obvious joke that just like a rich man, because I'm sorry if this offends people out there, but Donald Trump can go up and grab and not all women, probably not even a majority of women, especially not now, but back when he's talking about this thing from like years ago, I can't remember, it's like 4 or 5 years ago that this thing happened. Donald Trump, the billionaire, there's a lot of women who would let him grab their pussy. I'm sorry. It's just the way it works for wealthy men. That's why there's a lot of, you know, sad single guys that want more money. Because there are women that are motivated purely by money. And I think it was clearly obvious that he wasn't saying it in a predatorial way, like he went up and grabbed their pussies without permission. I think that he's just making the comment of like, hey, there's these super hot women that will just walk up and grab them right by the pussy. And that's it. Well, that's probably not it. They probably went on to other things, but you know, it's just the people that didn't get outraged by Bill Clinton that got outraged by Trump. I'm getting off. That's not what we're talking about tonight. We're going to shift back in. We're going to try to rein in the way that we work here. And I think we may change our name because I don't want to be associated with anymore with Glenn Beck, the fat hack. I am Glenn Keck, the fat not hack. And I think that there should be a pretty big distinction. So look for maybe a name change. But we're going to try to change a little bit of the format tonight, and we're going to start off talking about this. What should be on a lot of – there should be breathless coverage from the New York Times, and the Washington Post should be in a fucking tizzy over this, but they're not. A whistleblower, just so everybody's on the same page, that is somebody – who is involved in some kind of corporation, business, whatever, in this case, a charitable organization. But a whistleblower, if they come forward and they give information to, in this case, federal Michael Horowitz, the inspector general, the guy that's looking for wrongdoing. Now, Horowitz is looking for wrongdoing. And Dave, you can correct me if I'm wrong about this. I don't think that Horowitz is necessarily the person that would investigate. This is something that none of the articles that I read mentioned this, but it seemed like a pretty foregone conclusion. The IG doesn't, he's not somebody who would launch an investigation into the Clinton Foundation. He's somebody who would launch an investigation into the FBI. And their part, and this thing is a doozy. If you start connecting the dots, which it's really appalling to me, when you get into these levels of corruption that like the New York Times, who claims all this, that they're not biased. Well, why aren't they looking into this? You have and we'll try to unpack this thing here for you. Basically, the Clinton Foundation, who has been investigated multiple times, I think what was like a year ago, there was a private firm. They're called MDA Analytics, and they're run by accomplished ex-federal criminal investigators. And so they were looking at possible... They were just looking into the Clinton Foundation because the Clinton Foundation had been even conducting its own investigation by its own lawyers and was finding some pretty alarming things. And so this MDA Analytics, now, from what The Hill is reporting here, the MDA Analytics, they launched this investigation with their own resources. And the reason is that if the IRS finds that they broke tax code or that they violated the law, that there is a cash, it's basically like a reward that MDA Analytics. So they're motivated by money, but everybody's motivated by something. So I don't think it takes anything away, but this MDA Analytics, they started looking into the Clinton Foundation, looking to see if they were engaged in illegal activities and may be liable for millions of dollars in delinquent taxes and penalties. That's what it is. If the IRS finds out that they're delinquent on taxes and this MDA Analytics helped the IRS find it, then there's like a finder's fee. But they looked in and they were finding one of the big things was that Bill Clinton was having a hard time with it, but the people were at the foundation were constantly telling Clinton to keep his personal finances out of the foundation, but they said that he was impossible to rein in. There's and a lot of this too came from a meeting that they had with the CFO for the Clinton Foundation. What's his name, Dave? Jason Kessel, I think is his name.
Yes.
Jason Kessel.
Yes, Kessel.
Yeah.
Jason, but I know Kessel is.
So these investigators are doing their own. They're looking at public documents. They're also kind of digging around, and they're talking to Kessel, and Kessel is saying stuff like that. Bill, nobody can tell Bill Clinton what to do. That basically he is racking up all these different expenses on the foundation's dime, right? So if Bill Clinton goes out to travel, the foundation's paying for him. They're paying for his food. They're paying for his accommodations. They're paying for all this stuff that may or may not have anything to do with the foundation. So that was one thing they found. Another thing they found was that, and they weren't the only ones who found this. It's important to also distinct that the Clinton Foundation had their own lawyers look into this stuff, and they had been warning, but there was also a pretty good indications that there was like a quid pro quo when Hillary was at the State Department. And that's when you start getting to like the Uranium One deal. Hillary's relationship with like the Saudis. There's a lot. When she was a Secretary of State, the donations to the Clinton Foundation were just... And that's what a lot of conservatives have been shouting about the Clinton Foundation was that it was just basically a way for them to launder money, that people were donating large sums. And that's why Bill Clinton couldn't be told to leave the money alone, because he knows it's his money. It's not the foundation's money. They don't give a shit about charity. I think what it was something like I didn't look this up, but I had remember reading it's like an ungodly low amount of money that the Clinton Foundation actually donated to charity in comparison to Trump's foundation, which is under immense scrutiny. But like, I think like what 90% of it is actually donated. But the Clinton Foundation has been one of the most heavily scrutinized charitable organizations in the world. This is what the foundation is saying, and that this is all politically motivated. But it doesn't make sense that it's all politically motivated whenever it's their lawyers that are finding this out. And the MDA Analytics were not politically motivated. They were financially motivated. But I would argue that's, again, I don't think that's any kind of a bias. It's like if you know somebody's doing something wrong and there's an incentive for you to prove it, well, that doesn't mean they're not doing something wrong. It's saying the MDA's partners include experts. This is all I'm reading from the Hill. The Hill, this is the fella, John Solomon, that has been, he's been amassing you know, evidence about a lot of this stuff. He's one of the foremost authorities in the media that's actually trying to do diligence on all this stuff. So this whistleblower comes forward. They say that there is proof, there's evidence of wrongdoing in the Clinton Foundation. Bill is using the foundation's money for personal expenses. Hillary is trading favors for money, quid pro quo. And this Jason Kessel guy also makes the statement that he knows where all the bodies are buried. And this is stuff that this MDA analytics, they say they can prove. And nobody is really disputing what they're saying. Now, Kessel has since come out and said that he never incriminated Bill Clinton, but apparently at this dinner that he had with these MDA analytics guys, he spilled the beans on a lot of stuff. So, and this isn't even the thing that we're talking about. So this all this stuff started coming to light whenever MDA analytics, they gave the evidence they had, they turned it over to like the FBI, the IRS. And there is evidence that between Washington, D.C. and Little Rock, Arkansas, which is Little Rock's where the foundation is located, right, Dave?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, I think they have multiple offices. I think they have one in New York, probably.
Sure.
But I do know, yeah, they've got a big one down here that the FBI in Little Rock, I remember a while back I read a report where they had a plane and they were putting a bunch of document, like, you know, those office boxes full of stuff on there. This was a while back. But so, I mean, it's an interesting story. You know, you don't see it covered a whole lot just because I think a lot of people are afraid to go out on that limb. You know, there are some people that will cover it and report on it. It's probably one of those things where, I mean, the Clintons get away with so much crap. So there's probably some people that just don't want to fool with it.
Well, and again, we get to the sort of the reality, and this is what it's kind of maddening that people don't realize this because, and this is, look, if I don't believe that this is the case, but if in like 5 years we find out that like Trump is, really good friends with the Clintons, and that that this has all been a ruse to distract the American people from all the criminality. I know that's like as far fetched as conspiracies go, but it really, like, literally, the only reason I think that people aren't paying attention to all the horrifying, unconstitutional shit that's going on is because they hate Donald Trump so much. Because all this stuff with the Clinton Foundation all ties into Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State. Okay, Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI. He was part of the Uranium One deal. Robert Mueller is played a role. He worked with the Clintons. Bill Clinton's going to Russia and giving speeches that are worth $500,000. Okay. Even if Bill Clinton showed up and like told all the dirty details about what he did to Monica, I still don't think that people would pay his ass $500,000 to hear that. But I guarantee you that whatever he went over there and said wasn't worth $500,000. But after that little speech happened, then you have Hillary, who basically sells Russia a buttload of our uranium. Robert Mueller was an emissary for that. He was part of this. He literally brought I think a sample of the uranium to the people in Russia. Okay, so Robert Mueller, who, and this is the thing, I'm going to start calling Democrat congressmen, because the fact that they have created a position that is like higher than the president, right? An unelected leader, Robert Mueller, is unelected. He's accountable to no one. Okay. And the Democrats think that this is just okay. They're going to unleash it because they are so fucking petty and willing to just fucking blow it all up because they didn't win. Right. But I think it's even more than that, because you see the response from the FBI, the CIA, this so-called deep state. They were all balls deep in all the corruption with the Clintons. And so they had to have Hillary as the president of the United States. They had to have it because she ties up all the loose ends by being in power. Then nobody is going to do any meaningful investigations. You know, they expected to win the presidency. I think they probably expected to not lose all that they lost in the House and the Senate. So they would just quietly bury all this shit. Comey would just do his job and bury all this stuff, and they would all quietly become millionaires by, you know, doing traitorous things that are illegal and corrupt. These are all corrupt people. It's interesting. Comey talks about in his little he goes and talks in front of Congress, and it was pretty much worthless, I think, in the fact that Comey is not going to go talk to he's a snake, so he wasn't going to go they weren't going to trip him up. But if you read about what he's talking about as far as some of the things that he supposedly reveals under Congress, it's pretty telling stuff. You know, he talks that there's no evidence of bias with Strzok, and that he had plenty of opportunities to go after, but he didn't, which is, I think, it's bullshit. Comey saying that Strzok could have leaked information. Stuff was being leaked constantly. There was only a handful of people that knew it. So the idea that that this stuff was but then this is one of the things that they asked Comey. Well, you overstepped your bounds as the head of the FBI. The head of the FBI doesn't determine. That would be like if you were watching Law and Order and the same, you know, the same cops that arrested that also went to the judge and told the judge if they were going to refer them for charges. You know, anybody who's watched Law and Order knows that the police investigate, they catch them, they have to have evidence, because then the district attorney or the prosecuting attorney, the DA, decides whether or not they have enough to go to court. You know, there's some great scenes where they're at, you know, we don't have enough evidence to hold them, and the guys, you know, cops are angry because they know they did it. but it doesn't matter what they know. The best they can do is go testify. So Comey overstepped his bounds, but what he uses, and this is something that Strzok did, one of the things that he uses to exonerate himself was the fact that he was willing to release the letter that he released like a week before the election, where it said they were going back in and they were looking at these things. Now, he says, well, why would I do that? If I was trying to help the Clintons, why would I do that? Well, all you have to do is look in Comey's book to see why he did that. Comey did that because in his world, Hillary Clinton was a sure win, and he didn't want anything hanging over her head in the presidency. He didn't want anybody to come back and find out. You know, if you talk to some of these other FBI agents who have successfully been silenced, because I don't know if people remember, but a year or so ago, there were people that were wanting to come forward and basically talk about some wrongdoing and the fact that the emails that they found on Anthony Weiner's laptop, that laptop sat there for like a month before anybody took a look at it. And basically Comey reluctantly looked through, and then somehow they were able to go through, you know, tens of thousands of emails and decide, yep, no, we're all clear. And there's people that are saying still today that they still don't know what all is on Weiner's laptop. So the idea that that's something that proves that Comey, I think it should show people that he is a liar. because in his own book, he says that the only reason he did that was to clear her name. He was trying to help her. He wanted to make sure that she didn't have after a month after she gets elected, somebody says, well, hey, the Wiener laptop, we found all these classified documents that were sent, you know, again. So he's a snake. We all know he's lying. He knows we're lying, but I think Comey's ego is ridiculous. But so, and I haven't even gotten to the whole main reason we're talking about this, but the big thing that happened was the FBI raided this whistleblower's house recently. Now, the whistleblower, you may not have heard about this, but the whistleblower, he turned in his information a year ago. And nobody, you know, supposedly there's been some flurries of activity in Little Rock at the FBI and some in Washington. But boy, we hadn't heard jack shit. And now there are some people that make good points, I guess, in saying that, like, well, a good FBI prosecutor, they're not going to let you know what's going on. But still, it's been a year and nothing. There's also something in this Hill article I was reading where they're saying that there was some inquiries that, hey, what have you done with this information? And the Department of Justice, I think this shows, too, that Jeff Sessions was corrupt. I don't think that it was just that he was scared to do stuff. I think that he was somehow in on it. I don't know. Because he had this information and he declined to investigate it. Now, he appointed this guy, John Huber, who was supposed to be looking into all this stuff. And apparently only like a week ago did his office request some of this information that the whistleblower turned in, because he's going to have to go in front of Congress. So all of a sudden there's a scramble. Hey, Robert Mueller has spent tens of millions of dollars in his investigation. What have you done? And they're scrambling to go, oh yeah, well, hey, we're trying to follow these leads down. Well, the FBI has ignored this whistleblower. You know, whistleblowers are protected. If you go to the government and you give them evidence that somebody has committed a federal crime, that you're protected from anybody coming back on you with retaliation. But the FBI raided this fella's house. Dave, do you have the guy's name? The fella who was actually the one that was the actual whistleblower?
Yeah. Ah, crap.
Was it Kane?
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say Dean Kane, but I knew it wasn't Dean awesome. Kane. It would be cool, though. Yeah.
Dennis Nathan Kane. So this is out of the Daily Caller. And it's – I don't want to sit here and just read it verbatim, but, you know, it's talking about the Bureau raided – this is his lawyer talking. The Bureau raided my client to seize what he legally gave Congress about the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One. Okay, so that the fact that it's not just the Clinton Foundation, the fact that it's also Uranium One, that implicates Robert Mueller. That implicates the FBI. So the FBI, who is basically part of this investigation, now they have gone and they go and knock on the guy's door, and he tells them, you know, hey, I have, it said that, he tells them that, Kane informed the agent while he was still at the door that he was a recognized protected whistleblower under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act, and that Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz recognized his whistleblower status. Kane further told the FBI agent, the potentially damaging classified information has been properly transmitted to the Senate and House Intelligence Committees as permitted under the Act. Socaris, which is, he's the lawyer, maybe. Mm-hmm. The agent immediately directed his agents to sweep the suburban home anyway. So for 6 hours, the guy gives them the documents that he had transmitted to the Senate and to the IG Michael Horowitz. Again, Horowitz is not somebody who investigates, you know, fraud in as far as the Clinton Foundation. He is the watchdog for the DOJ and the FBI. So he watches for fraud, you know, criminality within the actions of like the FBI. So him becoming involved, right? So it would be like, you know, if Tony Soprano, if one of Tony Soprano's guys turned a state's witness on him, and then Tony was allowed to go in and tear the guy's house looking for what evidence he gave the federal agents. That's what this boils down to. And there's just no outrage out there for it. Our values are being like eroded daily. We have a special counsel who's out of control and who has just completely usurped our Constitution, doesn't give a shit. I don't care what he comes out with. I don't care if his report comes out and he's actually been looking at the Clintons this whole time. I don't give a shit. Robert Mueller is an affront to our republic. And the fact that the FBI and these people, one of the reasons that they're able to do this is, number one, there is a real weakness in the DOJ and the FBI. That's obvious. And I'm hoping that this Bill Barr fellow that Trump has nominated for AG is going to come in and clean it up. But I've just lost hope on a lot of those things. The swamp has really revolted here. But also another big reason is because the media is doing everything they can to avoid talking about this stuff. Dave, what have you looked at, some of your own research on this? What's your opinion on what's going on here?
It's basically about all I could find was that story you were talking about, and then some kind of, you know, theories on what might be happening. You know, it could go either way. The key thing here is just, it's a swamp, man. They call it the swamp for a reason, and you just don't know if there's enough people on the other side that want to do the right thing and investigate and bring down and prosecute people that have done actual wrongdoing, or if they're just political hacks, you know? And so you just kind of wonder, is it ever going to see the light of day? Is anyone ever going to do anything legitimate about it other than just, you know, kind of grandstand and go on, say, you know, Fox News or wherever and just say, oh, we're looking at this, we're looking at that, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and then nothing ever happens. You know, that's kind of been the standard operating procedure here for a while. And it may be something, you know, I've always thought that the Clintons getting to where they are and where they've been, you know, I think they're on the downhill side now, obviously, but to get to where they were, to be, you know, basically the power brokers of the Democrat Party, there has to be people inside the Democrat Party and in Washington that don't like the Clintons and would just like for the Clintons to be gone. And just then they could move on to other whatever they want to do. There has to be, I don't know, there has to be some people that don't like the Clintons, I would think. And maybe some of those people are in positions where they can, you know, go forward with this investigation and bring them down or whatever. That's kind of how, you know, politics is, really. So that's just kind of my observation of it. You know, I hope it's happening. I mean, because I think they're crooked as snakes. I mean, if you look at the donations of the Clinton Foundation and how high they were in the hundreds of millions while she was a Secretary of State. And then as soon as she lost the presidential run, you know, in 2016, then they actually shut it down, I believe. I don't know that it's still up. They had to let, I know they let like 20 something people go. They fired 20
something. It's still functioning. as of right now, it's still functioning. And yeah, they had to, I think they had to shut down a good part of it. But yeah, that's one of the things that Hill article was talking about too, was that, mm-hmm. you know, charity obviously is tax exempt, but one of the things that they were looking at was that some of the donations from foreign, you know, basically foreign agents that had come in would actually have fallen under taxable. They would have been taxable, but nobody ever paid. And right. it just talked about, like I said, this comes from John Solomon on the Hill. He's one of, I think, the few. I definitely don't necessarily agree with, you know, his politics or whatever, but he's one of the few, and I don't necessarily think I disagree with his politics, but I think he kind of does a good job at trying to not let that taint what he does as far as reporting. So he's somebody who has broken some really important stories of corruption and things like that. So, but one of the things that they were looking at was this culture within the Clinton Foundation, where people that knew that there were people begging to get whistleblower status, because not only were they witness to criminal acts, but they were kind of being forced to do them. And then usually if you're in a situation, and this really is pertinent when you're talking about different lawyers and things like that, but if you're conflicted, if you have some kind of conflict of interest, there are steps that you take so that you're distanced from that, so that there's never any question over it. But one of the things that Solomon article was talking about was that there was just really no, people didn't know how to go about, you know, sort of reporting that they were conflicted when they would run into these conflicts. And there was just kind of this attitude where there wasn't anybody to report to, there wasn't, those kind of things just weren't done. I think it's the thing that is so maddening is the contrast between how Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation have been treated versus how Trump and how his family, his cabinet, the founders of this country really understood how the pressures of being a president and how important the position was. And they really talked about how it was important that the president wasn't constantly hounded and distracted. And they did a really great job at looking to the future, but they could not have even possibly imagined the kind of pressures that somebody like President Trump faces. And so everything that has been done since he's been a president has been an affront to our Constitution. These are people that want to erode our values all the time. And it just feels like there's nothing we can do about it. And the people that are there to do something about it, they just don't either. You know, it's like that old adage where those cops, you know, they're limited by having to follow the law while criminals aren't. Well, it seems like, you know, these different people that really get into the, it just seems like there, anybody who tries is up against such an oppressive force. When you get into taking somebody like Robert Mueller, who, I mean, hell, he let innocent men, he knew they were innocent, he let them rot in prison for people like Whitey Bulger, who were federal informants. The man does not have, you know, this idea that he has this, he's just booming with morality is ridiculous. But, you know, I think that the more people that get aware, we have to call our congressmen. We have to do what we can. And that means calling like your congressman, if they're Republican or if they're Democrat. You really have to let people know that this kind of stuff is not okay. Public sentiment. The only way public sentiment changes is when people are educated. And I think that Trump should just fucking pardon everybody that he can pardon, because that's the only way he's going to get a fair shake. And the idea that that would really cost him politically, like what? They're already going to impeach him. They're already going to investigate him to death. So, you know, I get it that he is a tactical person. So he's like holding back this FISA stuff and he's whatever. But dude, just fucking do it. Just rip the rug out from under these cunts. Take Michael Flynn and fucking these people just off the table. Because it's not going to get any better for you if you don't. There's no alternative where, like, you don't do that stuff. And they're like, okay, well, you know what? maybe we were unreasonable, so we'll just back off. You know, it's coming regardless. And the stuff that the people in the media and the, you can't tell the difference between media and politicians. And that's a dangerous time for us to live in. So we have to be more, there has to be more grassroots. People have to be more active. We're going to have to get out of our comfort zone because the people that we have left to rule, they have failed us. And so just like the people with the yellow vest in France, and this is a good kind of segue into our next, we're going to do a segment. Now this is a new thing, but, just sort of like the yellow vest in France who have decided that, this global warming bullshit is for the birds because Macron was getting into what the real agenda was, which was, taxing things like fuel and stuff like that, where, the people that live in the rural country, you know, the smaller towns outside of the big cities, they have no choice but to move into the bigger towns and go and compete for these jobs because these kind of fuel taxes and stuff. That's who it really hurts, is like the middle class and obviously the middle to lower classes. So it's kind of inspiring to see what's going on in France and it's what happens. You don't even need that many people. What percentage of the population in France is out right now? Less than probably 1%. But you just need, you know, you need something to make a symbol, and people just get fucking sick and tired, and they say, "Fuck it, you know, we're gonna take it back." And it didn't take much for Macron to bend over. And first he said he was going to suspend the tax for six months, and now they're just not going to do it. And it just took, you know, people standing up and getting sick and tired. But so this next segment we're going to roll into is going to be a Dave reaction here. I'm just going to read Dave some news stories and just get his first reaction. So this first story, Dave, you remember whenever Starbucks decided to bow down to ridiculous racial pressures, whenever like what seemed like these black thugs went into a Starbucks and just decided they weren't going to buy anything. And so the manager did the reasonable thing and said, "Look, you need to leave." And the guys were hostile to her. And so she called the cops, and it was almost like the whole thing was planned to try to send some message to Starbucks. Why the left wants to send messages to Starbucks, I don't know. But so now Starbucks said you can go in there and you don't have to buy anything. They made like the dumbest decision out of trying to appease the mob, which you'll never do. So here's this headline based on that. Starbucks bathrooms may be open to all, but good luck finding a free stall. Dave, what's your reaction to people drinking coffee in the morning? They go to try to take a shit and there's like a junkie asleep by the toilet. What do you think that what's your first impression of that story?
They made their bed. Now they got to lie in it. I mean, this is a pretty lefty organization, and then they bowed down to some bullshit, some supposed racial stuff, and, you know, came out and and opened their bathrooms up to whoever wants in there. So what do you think's going to happen? You know, there's always going to be people that take advantage of things, and so that's why there are rules and things like that in restaurants. I mean, I can't go down here to the La Quiera Taco and just hang out in there at a booth, you know, without ordering stuff. They're going to be like, "Hey, what are you doing?" But I mean, hey, you know, these businesses that decide to do that stuff, I mean, I don't really feel sorry for them or anything. They made the decision to kowtow and bow down to these, you know, for no reason, bow down to like some sort of, I guess, social justice warriorism or whatever. And
right.
So, I mean, it's funny to me. I'll be honest.
All right. Yeah, it is funny. So moving on to this next one. This has to do with, well, it'll kind of speak for itself. Progressives scold, it says progressive scolds are obsessed with destroying our holiday classics. And this just has to do with, this is an extension of the war on Christmas that the left has been doing for years now, where they're just trying to eliminate the holiday. It's it's in Christianity, it is the biggest, holiest holiday, I believe. I mean, I think Easter is up there, but I still would say that Christmas, when Jesus was born, and then all the other things that go along with it. There's the Santa Claus, and that he's, you know, based on Saint Nick and all this. So, but this is like the thing where BuzzFeed is saying that the old Rudolph movie is like racist and homophobic and all this bullshit, which is so ridiculous. You have to read, you have to be so personally insecure to read into stuff like that. But and this isn't Glenn Keck react. So what's your reaction to that? To that headline and kind of what it entails.
The retardation of common sense.
Yeah.
So I remember, let's see, and you're right. Every Christmas, man, you see these stories pop out at these liberal rags like BuzzFeed, where, you know, they'll come out with some headline, you know, about, you know, like I've seen some recently about, you know, Mary being pregnant, you know, and just her right to an abortion. They'll try to like skew it into some, like, you know, topic that they are like passionate about. You know, they're like you said, they don't like Christmas. They don't like religion. They don't like, you know, they don't like some sort of moral accountability with people. And so they go through and they find like, it seems to be with like children stuff and just these innocent things like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Frickin' Reindeer. I mean, how many people have seen that claymation thing? It's been around forever and a day. Kids watch it. I've watched it probably a bazillion times, and never once has racism or whatever kind of bullshit they try to drum up ever popped into my head. I mean, it really is, when you step back and look at it and you talk to somebody who just off the street doesn't keep up with politics, and you ask them that, you know, their reaction is going to be, no, it's not. I mean,
right.
It's the,
well, Rudolph's story is all about overcoming that kind of thing. I mean, that's the thing that's like, you know, I was bullied actually to a pretty, I was bullied in very violent ways when I was growing up. And then I got to the point where I fought back, and that has profoundly affected me throughout my life. And I think in a mostly positive way, you know, so there is, I, you know, now that I have kids, do I want them to get bullied? Well, no, not necessarily, but bullying does kind of serve a purpose, and it can show you how you can overcome problems. And even in the case of Rudolph, it's the ultimate. I think it's so kind of funny, because if you even want to put it as an allegory for racism, which I don't think it at all is, I think that you can read anything into whatever you want to. But even if you tried to put that, it's like, well, at first, this, you know, Rudolph is different, and so he's treated poorly because nobody sees a value in what he is. But then by the end of the story, his what makes him different ends up making him, you know, more valuable at the end. His difference becomes an ability, a strength, as opposed to a weakness. And so I think that's what most kids, when they watch it, it's just silly. It's just silly. But moving on here, this one is Trump takes aim at Paris protest comment on climate change agreement. And this is just Trump saying that obviously he was right. He's taken a lot of crap for the Paris Climate Accords from all the usual suspects of idiots, the Hollywood cucks and all these people. But this France is an ultimate example of the realities of this ridiculous climate change crap. You know, I should have included this article, but NASA released something the other day that said that the polar caps are actually, they're adding more ice faster than they're losing ice. So the whole thing that the like, it's so funny. NPR did, I know I'm kind of going off the rails on this thing, but NPR did a whole story about this one island that was slowly, the water was slowly taking the island, and it was like this mayor and these few people that lived on this island that didn't know what they were going to do, but they knew, and it was all leading up to the first Paris Climate Accords, and this is when Obama was still in office, and it was, well, just in like 10 years, they're going to be underwater. Well, now the water has receded. It's not taking the island over, and nobody wants to talk about it. So, but what's your reaction to this Trump basically using the Paris protest as a way to kind of reaffirm that he did the right thing in staying out of the climate accords, because they were not meant to actually affect change from like China and India, who are the largest polluters. They were meant to like punish the US and other countries and basically make it to where we cannot be energy efficient.
Right. And that's kind of the big deal about it. You know, you have China and India pumping out to all this pollution, and you have other people paying the bill basically for it. And this whole, you know, I'm not going to get off on a climate change little soapbox here. Well, I think it's all bullshit, but I mean, you have these, my thing about climate change is, what's the answer to it? You know, well, you got to have more, you got to give your money to, we got to have more money to what? You know, no one has an answer for it. They're like, they cut down on CO2 emissions. I mean, again, I'm
getting, we got to do something right now.
Yeah, right, right. They keep moving the clock, the doomsday clock back too. I remember Al Gore, we should have been gone a long time ago, according to those guys. So no, I'm not going to give parts of my money to these people, especially someone like Al Gore, who rides around and he's got like 8 homes and jets and all this shit, and he's wanting like $15 billion to fight climate change. I'm like, no, you start somewhere else first, buddy. You can't have my fucking money.
Yeah, yeah. Tell Al Gore to turn his air conditioner off and stop heating his pool and all that stuff. So, but moving on here, this is, I know it's a serious subject, but motherfucker, this is one, I could have picked like 7 different articles and they all would have been basically the same thing. Science teacher accused of sending nudes to 15-year-old. A former Miss Kentucky turned science teacher was busted for allegedly sending pictures containing nudes to a 15-year-old boy. I read something yesterday, another like 20-something, pretty good looking teacher that was having an affair with a 15-year-old. And man, I'll let you take it first, but goodness, like, what does this say about how these beta cucks, how well they're doing out there with their wives, when their wives are turning to like the 15-year-olds in their classes, you know, who haven't yet learned how to curtail their masculinity. Anyway, what's your
Yeah, that's kind of my that's kind of my assessment on it. Really, is that you see these stories more and more nowadays. Of course, the internet's out, so I mean, it's you're more things like that. But it really speaks to these millennial women and these they have these beta cucked dudes. I mean, I see it occasionally as I'm out working and things, and I'm assuming that's why they turn to like 15-year-old boys. You know, that's the only thing I can think of. I don't understand why a teacher who is marginally older and has like a way cooler life than a 15-year-old would ever have. I mean, that's, I don't know
the one that attraction to it. The one I read yesterday, the lady had a miscarriage, and apparently she said that had such a profound effect on her, she just was finding comfort where she could. Well, it's like, if you're a halfway decent-looking woman and you're on Facebook, you don't have to fuck a 15-year-old, you know? Right. And I'm sure that these women have, like, some mental issues, but still, to try to fulfill your sexual fantasies with, like, young boys... I know that the internet sort of exposes us to, you wouldn't necessarily hear about these stories, but something like this, I don't think this stuff happened as much back, back in the day. And it seems like you used to have more of like male teachers and coaches mm-hmm. would get caught with young women. And now it seems like it's kind of gone the other way. And I'm sure that these women are, mentally, they have issues, and there's a lot. It's a very complex issue. But I think it's gross, but I think it's also a symptom of these millennials. You know, they've completely emasculated the men that they're with. And then, they're attracted to young boys.
It's a weird thing, man. It's really a weird, like, I don't understand. I don't know. It's a big culture change. You know, our culture is changing quite a bit, in my opinion, anyway, just in different areas. And that's one of them. And it's, that's a whole other 5 or 6 podcast, honestly, but
it just always reminds me of that South Park where the Ike is having the affair with his teacher, and then they're like, the cops are like, Kyle goes in to tell them, they're like, "You mean that pretty hot teacher? Nice." They're like, "Aren't you gonna do an investigation?" You're right.
Yeah,
we need to find that boy and give him his coolest kid in the world badge. But I know it's not a joking thing or laughing thing, but I mean, it's when I was 15, I had a sexual encounter with a 32-year-old woman who was it was a guy I knew's mother. He wasn't even necessarily my friend. But I can kind of see, but she was like somebody who didn't have a husband, and she was really, really big, like alcoholic and stuff like that. And some of these boys that this stuff is happening to, they talk about how they're scarred for life too. And I just think that's kind of a difference. Now, I wouldn't want my son to have an older woman because I don't doubt. But, like I said, I had sexual encounters with older women when I was a teenager. And I don't know. I don't feel like it scarred me
well,
for life. But I think that just the culture is different. Generations are different.
I think in those cases, it's got to be more than sexual because, I mean, you take that woman, the Kentucky, Miss Kentucky or whatever. I saw a picture of her. She's an attractive lady. There's, right. If it's just sexual, there's no way she couldn't go out and get, you know, right. get some guy and go have sex. You know, there's something else there, and that may be why the boys kind of get scarred by it, you know, because this there's this older woman, like, I don't
pursuing
know.
Pursuing them.
Yeah, pursuing them know? Like a relationship.
And there may
a
be
relationship.
Some kind of, like, mother thing, you know, because these women are getting older and older before they're having kids. And there may be, like, this misplaced, you know, need to kind of act motherly, and it comes out in this. I don't know, because the one lady said that she had a miscarriage and it kind of led her to it. So, you know, I don't know. It's just that's something I guess that I don't get. I don't get why that's happening. I don't think it should happen. I'm not one of those people who thinks, oh yeah, it's cool, super cool for that kid or whatever. And I'm not saying that since it happened to me that these kids are, you know, they're wrong for feeling the way they do. I think they're completely entitled to. But yeah, it's probably a different thing when somebody that's in, you know, a position of power pursues you. Like, these women are, like, pursuing these boys.
Yeah, that's got to be weird.
It's
like,
fucked up.
Just think when you were, like, 15, if there was a woman that age, you know, like...
Yeah. You're not equipped for
no,
what...
No, you don't know what to...
You know, for what they're doing and what they, you know, what they want and...
like, emotionally, so you're so far, like, immature emotionally and to deal with women, you know, especially of that age, especially some with obvious, you know, I would... just guess and bet that a lot of these women have some sort of issues, you know, some sort of emotional issues.
Right.
Because I mean, it can't just be the sex thing. It's got to be they're pursuing some sort of relationship.
Yeah. And, right. I mean, there's like the high school kids out there are not, you know, when I was like 15, 16, I was not having good sex with anybody. You're not, you know, you don't,
let alone a relationship right. or something. You're just like, I mean, hell, you can't even, you know, put your clothes on barely. You right. know, you're like this kind of bumbling.
You're 15. Kid. You don't even have your driver's license.
Yeah,
so I
mean,
know.
You know, you're just
you can't
trying
even
to
drive
figure...
over there. That's so fucked up. All right, well, moving along here to another insane woman that should have.
Oh, no.
Probably had some children, and maybe she might not be so bug-eyed and crazy, but there's calls for an ethics investigation into, you know, Ocasio-Cortez after she threatens Donald Trump Jr. Did you hear about this thing?
I saw, sort of. I didn't read into it much because she just kind of cracks me up. I look at her as a big joke. I mean...
Yeah, she's a joke, but she's Nancy Pelosi 2.0.
Yeah, yeah, she is.
I mean, she's
probably
going to be
around
for the rest of our lives, you know, in Congress.
Yeah.
And she'll be a gazillionaire by the time it's done. But she basically, I think Donald Trump Jr. tweeted out a meme that basically said, like, you know, the reason Americans love capitalism is because we like to walk our dogs, not eat them. You know, basically saying that in socialism that you eat your dogs, which, you know, you should be so lucky in socialist countries to have fresh
Venezuela.
To have fresh dog meat, you know, and to have meat at all. But so what does she do after Donald Jr. tweets this thing out is – she basically says, hey, not a real good idea to piss off somebody who's about to have subpoena power. And you know what? There may be a lot of shit that people in Congress can do now because nobody gives a fuck. But one of the things you can't do is you use your position in Congress to threaten people. And that's a big, big no-no. And there are two or three of these investigative the conservative journalist, you know, cited the statutes of the U.S. Code, basically saying, like, it's very clear that this is exactly what the law was made to guard against was, and seriously, what he just fucking tweeted a meme he didn't, you know, I don't even know if he tweeted it at her, but he tweeted a meme and you're talking shit that you're going to subpoena him for it. Like, that is literally, and see, that's the thing. The people don't realize why these socialists and these communists are so dangerous, because communism doesn't work out their differences with their political opponents. They're basically, their mission is to destroy. When you look at where communism, socialism has been tried, there wasn't a two-party system. They got rid of the other party. So you have to understand that with these people, she's just so stupid that she doesn't think before she acts. But she meant it. She is going to.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to subpoena Donald Trump Jr. They are going to try to fuck with him because he's outspoken and because his last name is Trump. That's as politically motivated as it gets. You know, that's why I say Trump should just pardon everybody that he can, because all this shit is politically motivated. If they weren't involved with his campaign, they wouldn't be under investigation, and that is that's what political bias and political targeting looks like. So I hope they do. I hope that the fucking ethics committee, at least, because, you know, her response was, well, I don't know, you idiots, no person has the power to subpoena. It's not like I can do it, whatever. It's like, yeah, no, you can. That's the whole point. You know, you weren't lying when you made the threat initially. If it was such a stupid thing to say, then why did you say it?
Right.
You know,
she's an idiot. I hope she keeps pushing that. You know, I mean, it, just Google her. You know, look her up and the things she said. It's so, she's has no clue.
No.
But you're right. She's very, very dangerous, though. A person like that,
she doesn't even know what the three parts of government are. So
right, and the people who voted her in, you know, I wish they would, her and all the people that voted for her can move to Venezuela and go live in that the place that they dream of. You know,
she would probably do pretty well, because she would be on that upper, you know, the position that she's applying for in socialism. They do pretty well. They're very well off in the, you know,
her Maduros constituents
or whatever. Yeah, the rest
her
of
her constituents, they can go live down in Venezuela.
Poor people of color that put her in, you know, there's just people that are desperate for something, and somebody wants to give them something for nothing. They don't care if they bring down the whole, you know, it's just spend money. We don't have to. How fiscally irresponsible is the strategy of, you just pay for it? A trillion? Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we just do it.
Yeah.
Once you take a fucking credit card out and you go help as many people as you can, just do it and then just deal with it later.
That's how it works at my house, you know. Hey, we need a new car. Let's just go do it, man.
Right.
Don't look at the price. Just go get what you need.
People like Randy Rhodes die in helicopter crashes and Steve Ray Vaughan. Like, why haven't there been any politicians? Like, why can't Ocasio Cortez get in a fucking helicopter every once in a while and fly into a mountain?
That's a segment, or maybe even, it might even be a whole podcast, probably just a segment of a podcast of people who died that were cool, and then maybe people who could have taken their place or something like that.
Switch it out.
Yeah, I know that's morbid and kind of wrong in a way, but I think it would be funny.
Because, I mean, imagine all of the badass licks that Randy Rhodes was like, have yet to have written.
Oh, yeah.
My God. And Chuck Schumer fucking jowled out. All right, moving along here. There is and this is something I don't know a whole lot about. I didn't even really read the article, but I just thought it was kind of typical. So, if you don't know the specifics of it, you know, just sort of comment on the culture of it. But it's a New York State senator trying to clarify his white guy's comment. And apparently New York State Senator Kevin Parker tried to clarify comments he made Thursday about not showing up to a meeting with four white guys. You know, it's just basically it's okay to be racist against white people. Just like during segregation, it was okay to be racist against black people. This is how Democrats operate. We talked about this last time in the race issue. But, you know, this is just more of things to come. Dave, what do you think on this?
It's just, you know, like you said, it's just racism out there against white people. And it's the cool thing right now, you know. The anti-white, you know, what do they keep calling it? The patriarchy, the white patriarchy. You know, the psychology and idealism and the mentality of victimhood is something I have a hard time comprehending. I just don't think that way. I wasn't born or raised or live my life as a victim.
Well, you're a well-adjusted human being, so.
Well, I mean, there are times where you get screwed over in life. Everybody's been through it. But, I mean, to go through your whole life thinking you're a victim, and especially something, you know, like such as race, you know. I was reading some Thomas Sowell the other day, and he was talking about, you know, slavery and stuff. And it was basically, you know, that I can't remember the quote, but it happened over 200 years ago. You know, there were white slaves. There were slaves in Asia. There were Asian countries that had Asian slaves. I mean, slavery isn't conducive to just black people. Black people have not... They're not the only race that have been slaves. I mean, all these other people have been slaves.
They don't have a monopoly on oppression.
Right. They don't have a monopoly on oppression, you know. And even their own people enslave them, probably to this day. I think in Africa there's still places where they have slaves. Right. You know, black people have black slaves. And then, you know, Asia... They had Asian slaves and European.
Yeah,
they
crazy
had your,
shit. I mean, it's the whole disregard for human life over in a lot of these Asian countries, and people sort of forget the fact that the indentured servitude, which was mostly white people, that was a real shittier version of slavery. Because if you think about it, let's say that I am a wealthy plantation owner, right, and I've got a really shitty, dangerous job that I need done on my plantation. Now, who do I pick? Do I pick A, the slave that I bought, that I'm going to have him for the rest of his life, that I want to try to get the most out of? Do I send him to go do the dangerous thing, or do I take the fucker that I've only got for two more years, that after two more years, it doesn't matter anyway? I mean, they rode those... indentured servants, they rode them to death in a lot of cases, because why not? I mean, you work those fuckers to the bone, and in a lot of cases they were treated far more harshly than the black slaves. Not to say that anything was justified, but you know, like you're saying, fucking life's rough all around. The shit that happened didn't happen to anybody here. I guarantee you that they couldn't even begin to fathom how to handle something like that. It's a shame that all of the strengths, because, you know, the black community, as I always was growing up and I knew black people, they were always strong, very, you know, had a lot of pride in themselves, really worked and earned who they were. And it seems like, there's so much weakness now with people thinking that they're victims and they're entitled. You know, if that's what you think of yourself, then you're a weak little piece of shit and the world's going to chew you up and spit you out. And you don't deserve the legacy of people that were slaves, who it took a monumental amount of strength and personal integrity to live through that life and to still be, you know, a lot of them were very hardcore Christian, because the Bible is all about freeing the slaves and oppression and things like that. So you know, these slaves, they took the really true, they really truly were victims. They really truly were oppressed, but they had a legacy of, you know, pride and not sitting around thinking the world owed them. And the people today that invoke that legacy are, they don't deserve it because they don't have a tenth. They don't have a fucking hundredth of what, you know, what those slaves had that actually got them through their lives where they actually, you know, tried to live somewhat meaningful or very meaningful lives, regardless of their circumstances. You know, these fuckers want a handout for everything, and that's just, you know, they didn't go through that so that you could be a weak piece of shit now. If you could go back in time, nobody back then would have said, yeah, well, we, you know, it was real hard for us, but maybe someday our great 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 grandkids will be whiny little entitled pieces of shit. That would make me feel so good. You know, that's not that's not even what people like Martin Luther King wanted. People that invoke his name don't understand what he was about. People like Al Sharpton, Martin Luther King would have chewed him up and spit him out, because Martin Luther King was not a race baiting, power mongering, crooked piece of shit that literally was responsible for deaths. Al Sharpton, you know, people like that should do everything they can to stay alive on this earth as long as possible. because what's coming next is not going to be good for them. I think I sometimes just imagine what, and I know you're not supposed to do this, so I feel, you know, I don't think it's a good thing, but I just imagine what it's going to be like for Don Lemon to stand in front of God, that smug piece of shit, and have to look over his whole fucking life and have to realize that he's accountable for all that he has said and done. But now I'm going to be having to go over this moment with God, and he's going to be like, you know, you weren't supposed to do that either. So, but I'm going to say right now to myself and God, then I'm sorry. I'm trying to be better at it. I have such hate in my heart. I'm trying to work through it, but we'll do this final one. And then we were going to do another segment, but I think we're probably running a little bit long here, and this is going to be kind of an adjustment time, but I kind of like the way it's going. So, but this last one just has to do with little cuck boy, Kevin Hart. I use cuck a lot because I just use it in lieu of all the other really offensive words I would rather say, but, you know, little angry man, little elf boy, Kevin Hart, the Academy, you know, he, did you hear about all the hullabaloo with Kevin Hart?
I did read a little thing on it. Yes.
So, you know, blah, 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 but it says, now this is reported from BET. So I don't know how credible they are, but, is saying that the Oscars, that the Academy, since Kevin Hart's backed out for this supposed homophobic tweets, he refused to apologize, which he did apologize. He did renege. So let's not pretend like he's holding out, but he did apologize. But now they're saying they would like to get this. They would like to get somebody who has never said anything homophobic ever, so they want Eddie Murphy to host the Oscars instead. And Eddie Murphy has never said anything homophobic. He's never said anything controversial.
Are you serious?
Eddie Murphy in Delirious was he never said anything about gay people. He never did any of that. His record is impeccable.
Are you serious? They're wanting Eddie Murphy?
That's what this article is saying. I'm actually going to click on it here. And it, Sources say he's less interested after seeing the backlash Kevin experienced. But yeah, this was written by BET staff, so nobody even put their name to it. But it says that, you know, it's just talking about how Kevin Hart stepped down. And it says Radar Online is reporting that the Academy of Motion Pictures and Arts and Sciences has already set their eyes on another comedian to host the 2019 Oscars, none other than comedy legend Eddie Murphy. And then it kind of goes on to say that he's less than interested after this thing. And it says that back in 2012, Eddie opted out of hosting the Academy Awards following the issues with filmmaker Brett Ratner due to his use of a homophobic slur. So it's saying that Eddie didn't host because the Academy was trying to punish Brett Ratner for saying a homophobic slur, and Murphy was, I guess, defending Ratner. Murphy left to Get Behind, sharing a statement. First and foremost, I want to say that I completely understand and support each party's decision with regard to the change of the producers for this year's Academy Awards ceremony. I was truly looking forward to being part of the show that our production team and writers were just starting to develop, but I'm sure that the new yada, yada, yada. So, and then this Academy president says, I appreciate how Eddie feels about losing his creative partner, Brett Ratner. We all wish him well. But so, you know, he's obviously had plenty of gay jokes between him and, like, you know, Charlie Murphy and some of the shit Charlie Murphy, like the stories that he told, like, you know, because back in the 80s, that was ample material. And so, and dude, it's just, it's funny. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that is how we learn to cope and deal with things, is we laugh at stuff. And so, you know, gay people are funny. It doesn't mean that they should be treated differently. There's just an ample amount of material there. Because gay guys tend to be pretty eccentric. They tend to sort of not all of them by any stretch, and probably, you know, the majority of gay men are not flamboyant necessarily. But then you have it's a different sort of thing, and people work out their feelings a lot of times by using humor to cut through, and so, but you know. It's whatever. Like, I don't know. I just think that when you're going to start, and this all stems from, I think, that Kevin Hart at the beginning of this year said that he wasn't going to talk shit about Trump because he didn't want to piss off fans. And then he turned right around and he shit all over Trump. Well, you just opened the door to every time you're going to ever do anything, people are going to dig. The Mike Cernoviches of this world are going to go through everything that you have ever done, and they will find every skeleton in your closet because you fucking bowed out and, you know, you did the lowest common denominator. You attacked Trump when you should have just done what your first instinct was better. And this is why these people in Hollywood make all this money and have all this power. Well, they really don't have, you know, all this power. They're everything is contingent on them keeping in line, and that means periodically having to kiss people's ass. But what do you think about it, Dave?
I just think it's funny. I mean, the left have, and when I say the left, I mean it's that encompasses, you know, Democrats, media, Hollywood, tech, you know, these people, they've created this monster, so to speak. And you see more and more of it. The monster is turning back on them. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. A great example of one of the first times I started thinking about this was when Pelosi was doing a thing, and she had a bunch of people raid her. It was like a bunch of DACA people come in on her thing and start they were shouting her down and stuff, and I just laughed so hard because they've created this kind of almost, you know, kind of insane, you know, or at least uncontrollable social justice warriors, whatever you want to classify them as. And they've now started to turn on them because they still don't. They're going after a false feeling of something. They're all looking for something, and it's not being fulfilled. And so now they're mad at the people who've promised to fulfill it, and it hasn't come true.
You know, the monsters that they want to fight aren't real.
Right. So
then they make these, you know, straw men. And, you know, that just after it gets boring punching on a made up thing,
right?
Then it's just like a shark frenzied and just looking for any blood in the water. And this is what's going to happen with this outrage culture. And then I think they're just going to kind of get timed out. You know, I think this new generation coming up is sick of it. I think that our generation is sick of it. And I think that people are just going to stop placating the trolls. And there are so many people that think that means that most of the trolls are conservative, but no, they're not. It does include some conservatives now, because I think you had some people that said, well, if this is what the new rules are, we're going to play it too. But the real true outrage culture, like, it doesn't matter if you dig up those tweets, if there's not a whole outrage culture associated with, you can't say anything about gay people. You can't say anything. You're not allowed to even make a joke about it. It's just like there was an SNL guy who was like the first Indian, like dot Indian, like first Indian to ever write for SNL. And he's an uber liberal, you know, he's as liberal as you can get. And he goes to a liberal college on some sort of diversity day bullshit. And he starts telling jokes about like black gay people. It says something like, oh, so you look in the mirror and you say, yeah, okay, well, I guess this whole black thing's not hard enough to deal with. I'm just going to throw the gay thing on top of it, which, you know, it's the whole premise is bullshit, because it's not hard to be a black person in fucking America. I'm sorry. I know plenty of black people. They do just fine. But beyond that, it's kind of a funny notion. But these students started shouting him down. They cut his mic off when he tried to sort of defend the fact that, you know, he's just fucking telling jokes. What do they want him to do? But you have these little Nerf kids that they want to affect change in the world, but they can't handle getting tapped even by people that are on their team. And when you're just looking to be offended by everything, well, you're going to be offended. And I'm going to raise my kids to offend your kids. I promise you that. And then whenever you bitch about it, I'm going to show up at the PTA meeting and intimidate you face to face. So you're kind of fucked. And people like me are coming for you. Outrage culture. I'm going to raise my kids to be outrageous. That's going to be the motto of my house, and I'm going to back them up 100%. And the first principal that tries to come in and fucking lecture me about it, it's going to get turned inside out. I can tell you that, because I'm just waiting, biding my fucking time to, confront, you know, these people where they live. And I think being a parent nowadays, it entails a lot of that. So, Dave, you have anything you want to talk about before we close it out here?
I have one thing that I heard this week on Infowars.com. And it's hilarious to me anyway. I thought it was funny. PETA released a list of, what would you say? Phrases that they would like to have changed. And so I'm just going to read through them here. There's five. The first one is kill two birds with one stone. And so they want you to say feed two birds with one scone. And the next one is be the guinea pig. And they would like you to say be the test tube. beat a dead horse, which is pretty popular. Feed a fed horse. which kind of is, I don't know. I'll get that one. Bring home the bacon. They would like you to bring home the bagels. And my favorite out of all this is take the bull by the horns. You've heard that. They would like you to say take the flower by the thorns. And so that's all I have. You know, that's my ending there. Man. It's a crazy place.
The day that I let PETA dictate things I say is the fucking day you can prime this gun in my cold, dead fingers. Pamela Anderson is ugly as shit now.
So is she? Damn.
That's even less reason for me to care about what she thinks I should say. It's a constant assault on everything from our language to the way we, I mean, ultimately they want to control the way we think, and they seek to do that by controlling our language and everything that they can. So, Baby Bear and the Boba is telling us that, we've gone long here, but feel free to send any comments, concerns, suggestions, nude pictures. If you're a teacher trying to
specify the gender
anywhere. Okay, buddy, I'm just joking. Your mother would not like that. But send them to glennbeck2020@gmail.com. And thanks for listening. And we will see you later.